On the go? Take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron.
307, welcome back. The president of the Ottawa Senators says LeBreton Flats remains the only site the hockey team is seriously considering for a new arena. While at a city building summit earlier this week, he was asked about rumors that the team could move to a different downtown site. And he was asked, is it possible? Is this on the table? Cyril Leader said, the main focus, the only site the team really wants, is LeBreton Flats. However, he did say that nothing is definitive and that there are still shortcomings to its existing deals with the NCC. Joining us now for his take and his insight, Bruce Garriock, who's always covering this. He's Post Media's hockey columnist. Hey, Bruce, welcome back.
Hi, Christy. Good to talk to you.
First of all, how did you interpret those comments?
Well, I interpreted them that maybe he's trying to throw some water on the fire that Mark Sutcliffe, Mayor Mark Sutcliffe, has been creating as far as alternate sites go. You know, I think it's okay when you're a radio host and a hockey columnist to spitball about possible sites for a new arena, but I don't think it's okay if you're a former radio host and the mayor of the city to start throwing out trial balloons as possible locations for an arena. I think that what's been going on here is, and I think I've said this to you before, Christy, I really think that all Mark Sutcliffe is going to do in the end is end up giving the Senators a better deal at LeBreton, and maybe that's what they've asked him to do. But I think this idea of plowing down buildings or city and taking down city blocks to build an arena downtown, to me, that's always been a red herring.
You're referencing, of course, just for the listeners, where he was floating the idea that as the federal government is trying to offload its unused properties, maybe that could open up the space for a major attraction in the downtown core. He said, if there's an opportunity to take a piece of land that the federal government doesn't want anymore and then have that become the site for an attraction, then we need to look at that.
Yeah, and like I say, that's fine if you're you and me, or if he's in his old job, but he's not in his old job anymore. He's the mayor of the city, and I think that Toby Nussbaum actually made a good point last week. The city is heading towards LeBreton Flats now. Look, I think the site that Mark Sutcliffe offered up as far as Bayview Yards goes with 13.5 acres, I think that's a viable site. I think that by him is a good suggestion. But I also think it's delivered a bit of a wake-up call to the NCC that they have to do more negotiating. Now, I did report today that there are some hurdles that the Senators have with that site. Number one is that there's no parking. They have some concerns that there's no parking around LeBreton Flats, and they think it's going to be too difficult on a LRT system that's unreliable for their fans to get in and out of that arena on a nightly basis. I think their initial belief is that, you know, if it's going to take someone, and this is just an estimate, Christy, 2 hours after the game to leave the site, that's not going to work for them.
Right.
There needs to be some public parking around there. We can't rely on the LRT right now. You and I know at some point that's going to get fixed, and quite frankly, by the time there is a downtown arena, it probably will be fixed to the satisfaction. But I think the Senators are now focused on the site because they do have a September deadline looming to get a deal done.
I'll go back to Blues Fest when so many people were at LeBreton Flats, and I was one of them. And I went to Alanis Morissette, which was a banger night at LeBreton, and she was fantastic. She really killed it. And then I thought, I'll take the LRT home. And I went to get on the LRT to go west, take it as far west as Tunney's Pasture, and then I was going to figure it out from there because getting an Uber or a Lyft was a total nightmare down there. Everybody was moving around, and it was just a total zoo. So I go to get on the LRT, and they've closed it down going west, Bruce. And that was intentional because they said so many people were swarming it that it was a problem, so they just got people on buses for the first 45 minutes or half an hour after the concert let out. Well, I don't think that's a good excuse because didn't we build the LRT system to accommodate crowds? Didn't we build it for a huge influx of people? Because potentially one day we could have a downtown arena. Are we going to put on buses every time that the game lets out or that the concert lets out?
Yeah, and look, I want to say I think the people at OSEG have done it well. I've gone down to games down there taking the bus and the public transit, but they only do that 10 nights a year. Or maybe 12. You're talking about a team that plays 41 times a year at home, Christy. It's not feasible. And that's not the only hurdle. The hurdle to that is, okay, if you want more parking, that means they need more space. Now, I do believe that, and they also want to have an ice district. I do believe from listening to Toby Nussbaum, and he did tell me over a year ago that he was flexible on more space. I think that and this is just me now spitballing, because I'm a writer, not a mayor, I think that the NCC is probably going to have to get into the area of about 14 acres to maybe make the senators happy with what they have down there. That's me guessing. That's not based on anything. But I think if they want to have an ice district, they want to have some parking, perhaps the original plan called for a rink and a hotel on 7 acres. You know, that way you're doubling the size of the footprint down there. And the other thing we have to remember is it's pretty much a blank canvas down there. They haven't offered up much more in the way in terms of development. And I've always said, I think it's in the best interest of both sides to get a deal done there. You know, this could be Cyril Leader's legacy. He was part of this team. Well, his legacy is bringing the team here, but he was part of the group that brought the team here. They wanted to go to LeBreton Flats originally. They couldn't get that done. He wanted to go to LeBreton Flats 10 years ago. He did an awful lot of work, and they couldn't get that deal across the finish line. He wasn't there anymore when that whole thing fell apart. But I think he also sees this as an opportunity to get to LeBreton Flats, something he's been focused on for 10 years himself.
Great to hear from you today, Bruce. Thanks so much.
Always good to talk to you. I'll see you on the LRT.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Garriock, Post Media hockey columnist. The time is 3:15 on the show. I could dance, I could dance, I could dance. Watch me dance, dance the night away. My heart could be burning, but you won't see it.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
320. RBC's 30th annual homeownership poll is out, and it shows a stat that I don't find too surprising, that 60% of Ontario residents polled said they would need a side hustle or a second job to afford buying a home in our province. This was an online survey that was completed in January to February. Joining us to chat about it now, I've got Nick Pellucci on the line, Senior Director of Home Equity, Finance Acquisition and Distribution at RBC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Christy. Thanks for having me on.
What was your impression of that finding?
Well, interesting. So the survey and the respondents were really telling us loud and clear a couple things. One, 60% of the respondents saying that real estate is a really good investment. That's up year over year. And 29% looking to buy in the next 2 years, up from 22% a year ago. So some promising things there, but definitely on the side of where the market's at, affordability concerns with respect to inflation and prices increasing, definitely came out loud and clear in the poll results. And, inflation has been impacting all aspects of our lives, and saving to buy a home is no exception to that. And where we see that in some of the stats is 51% of respondents are saving less due to inflation, 58% are concerned about the cost of home ownership. That really highlights the impact of inflation. But, you know, there's still some confidence in them to say that they can still save over the next 4 years to purchase that home that they're interested in. And really that's coming from a couple of things that you touched on. And, you know, this notion of a side hustle, you know, a part-time job or something to the side, and 57% of the respondents saying that they needed a side hustle to help offset some of those impacts and really build their savings. And, you know, the other thing that comes out and has been there for a few years now is this notion of the bank of mom and dad and, you know, leaning on family members for support. And, you know, 62% of the poll respondents saying that they need to lean on family for support to help buy. But on the flip of that is that, you know, families are impacted by inflation just like everyone else. And so, you know, 39% saying they really can't, 39% of family members really saying they can't, they, you know, they want to help, but they really can't help from a financial perspective. So, you know, there's some things also coming through the poll on what, you know, are the respondents are saying, and that, you know, 19% are looking at buying a home with a family member. So almost like, you know, co-ownership with family, which is interesting. We haven't seen that as much before. 27% saying they want to live longer or living longer with their parents to help save money, which, you know, may not be something parents want to hear, but 27% living longer with their parents. And, you know, 54% of them prefer to 54% of family members really giving time at home to save versus that financial support. So really saying, you know, stay live at home for a little while longer, and that way you can help save some money. Maybe just last thing I would touch on, mm-hmm. As far as just other advice pieces, for the first time we surveyed new Canadians as part of the survey and saw some really interesting things come out of that, where, you know, 73, so really strong indication of new Canadians wanting to buy a home. So 73% of them dreaming of buying a home, 65% likely to buy in the next 2 years. That compares to only 29% nationally. So over twofold increase for new Canadians and looking to buy a home over the next couple of years.
It's fascinating, Nick, because if you reflect back to even just 5 years ago, having a side hustle was a sign of somebody who's a real hustler. Mm-hmm. That person's a keener. They're trying to save up for something really big. Whereas now it's way more common. A lot of people who you would consider to have a high paying job or a professional job have a side hustle. They're working evenings and weekends because that's just our new reality.
Yeah, and you're right. And that's definitely from a result of inflation and prices, and not inflation, just obviously on the impact on home costs, because some of these respondents wouldn't have even bought yet, but it's just on your other everyday items. You know, there are some glimmers of hope in the not too distant future with hopefully some, you know, rates decreasing later this year, and seems to be some indication around that. I think what the federal government announced last week in the budget, we don't have all the details, still a lot of details to flesh out, but it's moving in the right direction, I think, of helping Canadians afford and purchase a home. So, you know, starting to see that glimmer of confidence in buying a home starting to rise again, which is great to see.
Going back to your report, another number that stood out to me, the number of people that would consider moving out of their city to buy a home or a larger property. 56% of people admitted that they would probably have to do that, and they'd have to get out of where they currently reside in order to get a bigger place or to get into the market at all. And I think that's fascinating because, you know, we're not that close to Toronto. It's a 4 or 4.5 hour drive, whatever it is, depending on the traffic. Mm-hmm. But I've talked to a lot of new people in Ottawa recently that moved here because it is more affordable.
Well, yeah, and I think we definitely saw that in the poll. You know, I think there was also another interesting stat that jumped out at me, where 77% of the respondents felt that their community is overpriced, which I think just echoes exactly what you were talking about. And so, you know, at the end of the day, where to live, home, the type of home, whether it's a condo, townhouse, detached location, really comes down to the individual and your personal circumstances. I can't underscore enough the importance of all your listeners, whether you're a first-time home buyer or someone who's owned many homes in the past. Speak to professionals earlier rather than later. I just can't underscore the importance of that. And looking at, you know, your own personal financial picture, because what suits one person and where they want to live, and look at it from a total cost perspective, not just about the house, might not suit the next person. So sitting down with a professional, looking at your, you know, your savings, savings goals, what you can get pre-approved for in a mortgage. I think getting pre-approved, even if you're just in early stages of looking, is a really good idea. And also local real estate agents who have obviously a pulse on what's going on in the local community that you're in.
It's also interesting getting a realistic snapshot of what would be more affordable, because maybe you look at those home prices in a little tiny rural area that's 2 hours away and you think life would be so much cheaper out there. But if you have to go to the office and now you're driving 2 hours every day both ways, look at your commute time and look at the cost of gasoline.
Well, and that's just it, exactly. And you know, part of that is, again, right down to the individual and looking at it, not just outside, not just the cost of the home, not just your mortgage payment and your maintenance and insurance and those kinds of things, but really your entire lifestyle. You know, some people love to travel, right? And they don't want to give that up necessarily. So you need to factor up all those things as well. So, again, I just can't emphasize enough. It really comes down to the individual and what your goals are. And just the sooner you can talk to professionals, whether it's all three, I would say, financial advisor, mortgage professional, real estate, the sooner the better. And there's all sorts of online tools to help them too. I mean, we've got them at RBC. There's a number of them online that you can check out for free as well.
Thanks for the time today, Nick. Good to
really
have you aboard.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Nick Pelucci, who's the Senior Director of Home Equity at RBC. And I'll just say, in my own life, that's why I always giggle, Danny, when sometimes listeners make comments like, millennials are so lazy.
Oh, yes.
Let me tell you, the millennials I know in my life, a lot of them work not just two jobs, but sometimes three jobs, because they're doing that to keep their homes afloat.
That's right. As a millennial, I agree.
All around you.
I have no energy left at the end of the day.
It sounds like a cute thing when you call it a side hustle, but it's actually a grind. It's a grind.
It is.
3:29 on the show. We're about a minute away from your 3:30 news on the other side. We'll talk about TikTok. The U.S. Senate has officially passed its bill that will force TikTok's parent company to sell the platform or face a ban. That's next.
You're my little boo thing, so I'll give a hoot what you do, say, girl, I know. You a little too tame. I'll be shooting that shot like 2K, girl, I know. Tell him I'm next.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. A ban on TikTok and a ban on you and your voice. Politicians may say otherwise, but don't get confused. Many who sponsored the bill admit a TikTok ban is the ultimate goal. It's obviously a disappointing moment, but it does not need to be a defining one. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom.
That is a TikTok creator, Shouzi Chu. He uploaded that video to TikTok following the news today that the American Senate has passed a bill to force TikTok's parent company to sell or to face a ban in the United States. So a possible American ban on TikTok could be looming. This legislation is quite significant. Here to unpack it a little bit further, the editor-in-chief at Android Central, Shruthi Shaker, is standing by. Hi, Shruthi. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
What does this latest news signal to you?
It's a big deal. It's a really, really big deal. Now, I think the real win that the U.S. had is the House pushed this part of their foreign aid package deal, and it kind of included it as part of that bill, and so it kind of rushed the Senate to take this vote. Otherwise, you know, they kind of would take their own time to study it, etc. But it got passed, and when I woke up this morning, I was very shocked. This means a lot of things, right? So one, basically, TikTok has 9 months to sell the company. And who could that be? It could be anybody. It could be Google. It could be Microsoft. It could be a random other company. It's very uncertain right now. After the 9 months, the government in the U.S. has said that they would extend it by 3 months if they have a potential buyer, and that they're going through an actual deal. So really, within a year, this company has to sell to someone else.
You know, no doubt that the creators on TikTok are undeniably shaken. Understandably so, Shruthi. They have no idea what this is going to mean for them.
Absolutely. I think that was the thing that I am so incredibly concerned about, because there are a lot of people on TikTok that earn their money. I've since seen so many creators say, here are my other socials. Here I'm on Threads. I'm on Reels. I'm on YouTube Shorts. I have a YouTube channel. I have a Substack. Like, please go follow me there, because they don't want to lose the momentum that they have, lose the subscribers or the followers that they have, and in turn lose the money that they're making from these TikToks, right? A lot of it, specifically outside of the U.S., most of the people who are earning money are through ads or sponsored deals. But in the U.S., it's specifically from the TikTok Creator Fund, and now they're going to lose a lot of money. They're going to lose their livelihood, and that's incredibly, very, very concerning, especially in today's climate, in today's economic climate.
For people that aren't on TikTok a lot lately, it's not just the singing and dancing and the ridiculous, silly content that it used to be. That was quite the popular genre before. Now there's a lot of cooking content, shopping content, people that are influencers that make their livelihoods there. And so they use that platform and all their content lives on it. And it makes you realize, I think, Shruthi, that anybody who relies on a platform, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, what have you, that they're entirely dependent on the existence of that platform. Otherwise, they don't have their content anymore. They don't even have their audience.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think that's also why a lot of creators now are, I wouldn't say scrambling, but really trying to build their audience on other similar platforms and almost cross-post their videos, right? So if you're posting on TikTok, you can post the same thing on Instagram Reels or YouTube Shorts and try to build followings there. And truly, like, you build an entire life on TikTok, especially if you're a content creator or an influencer. And it's, again, like you said, it's not just funny videos. There's cooking videos. There's lawyers trying to explain things. There's people who are talking about books or whatever it is. You know, it's a way of earning that type of money, and now it's going to be taken away. And I'm really thought that it wouldn't get to this point, but it has. The U.S. is very serious about this, and I wonder if it's going to trickle down to Canada, to Europe, to Australia, you know, considering similar bans. I hope it doesn't happen, but this is serious.
The Prime Minister was asked about that, and he was pretty hesitant. He wasn't very forthcoming on the potential of anything happening here with legislation. Do you think that actually could become a reality? Do you think there's an appetite for it in Canada?
It's possible, but it also might not be possible. I'm also going to take a hesitant stance on this, because one thing I have noticed about Canada is while they look at other countries in terms of what they've done on legislation, they will always look towards Canadians and see what benefits Canada. So if they feel like there is a possibility of working with TikTok or figuring it out, they might do that. But it's hard to tell, you know, if that's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if Canada is investigating TikTok. I'm sure that that's already happening, and, you know, they're looking into that. But will it go into a ban? I think that's a little too soon to tell in Canada.
Great to hear from you, Shruthi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Shruthi Shaker, who's the editor-in-chief at Android Central, phoning into our show. A couple reactions on the text board here. Brandon in Orleans writes, oh no, now they'll have to get a real job. Here's what I'll say on that. TikTokers and influencers have a lot of skills and work that go into creating content. They are videographers. They are photographers. They've got a big personality. They're content creators. In fact, some of them, when they leave content creation for themselves because they decide they don't want to be influencers anymore because they're tired of being on their phone all the time and people recognizing them, they go on to sometimes pretty high-paid positions within marketing and social media companies because they do actually have the skills to fit the bill for what those companies, those people are looking for. So whether or not you think that it has value, whether or not that you think it has legitimacy, they are making big-time money. And it does require a lot of time commitment, consistent effort. It is possible for somebody with just a cell phone to become a social media influencer. But a lot of the time, the skills that you require to succeed in the job are pretty major. So whether or not you have respect for it, that's up to you. It is a real job. And there's a lot of money on the line. 3:44 on Ottawa Now. I would never want to do it, Danny. I would never want to be a social media influencer.
Are you sure?
No.
If you did have a channel and produce content, what would it be?
Ooh, maybe making cocktails?
Cocktails? Oh, I would think it would be a dog channel.
A dog channel? Yeah. Oh, you mean like put my dog on TikTok or create an Instagram for my dog? No, I've never been one of those. Well, I do follow some of those accounts, but I can't be bothered.
Do you follow Dolly and Betty?
I don't. I don't think I do.
That's my kitty's Instagram.
Oh, you do this with your cats.
I do, but it's not for content producing. I use it as a photo album to keep a timeline of them growing up because I got them from kittens.
You throw it on the grid.
Yeah, it's really for me and friends.
You can follow me, Christy Cameron on air, Christy with a K and a Y. I'd love to have you on there. We can connect when I'm not on the radio, even though I'm on here for 4 hours a day. Should you be interested in my life? I don't post that much, though, do I?
You don't.
Not that often.
If anything, I'm sending you more videos that I think are funny or that we should have on the show or something.
I don't have the time and energy to run another social media account for my dogs. If you add me on Instagram, you'll just get me. And my dogs are featured, and my fiance sometimes is on there. Yep. Maybe my gardening, some cocktails, definitely some cottages in the summer.
Maybe a gardening cocktail hybrid.
How about cottage hopping? That'd be great.
Well, no, then it would just be
I could get signed on by Airbnb, and then I could just go cottage hopping all summer and host from the dock.
But it wouldn't work because it would just be content of you in the rain.
True. Not as appealing. 3:45 on the show. So you've heard of regular antiperspirant, and then you've heard of deodorant, which is often aluminum-free. And now natural deodorant has become all the rage. A lot of people now at the gyms that I go to are sporting natural deodorant. How effective is it? Depends on who you're working out next to. The natural deodorant doesn't stop you from sweating. It just disguises it a little bit. And they believe that it's healthier for you. So those are the two things that I've learned about recently. But then, Danny, I was reading about all-body deodorant, meaning deodorant that you put on other parts of your skin.
Okay, I can see that.
Is this for your feet?
I would think it would be for in between your thighs or like maybe under folds of skin, like if you're a woman, under your breasts.
Nooks and crannies.
Yeah.
The ads claim the products can be used from head to toe and even from, get this, pits to bits.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
How charming is that slogan? Dr. Monica Lee is on the line, a cosmetic and medical dermatologist in Vancouver. Hi, Dr. Lee. Thank you so much for phoning in.
Oh, thanks, Christy, for having me.
I've never heard of this. How commonly is this used?
Well, there's certainly, as you said, brands that have been, you know, putting out their claims and also their marketing materials with regards to whole body deodorants. So it's been trending because it's been featured in social media channels. You know, historically, if we look at the use of deodorants or antiperspirants, which I have to emphasize are actually two separate different products. Mm-hmm. It's being reserved for areas where we, you know, conventionally associate it with sweat. So mostly armpits. But yes, there are now more products and more attention to this possibility of applying it everywhere in the body.
Okay, let's break it down. I tried to do my best. What's the difference between antiperspirant and deodorant?
Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at deodorants, as the name implies, it's really more of like a cosmetic product. And the reason is because deodorants are formulated such that it can mask odor from sweat. And if you look at the physiology of sweat, sweat itself is this milky product that's produced from sweat glands. And in itself, it actually doesn't smell. But when there's interaction with the natural bacteria, sometimes more in some individuals than others, with this interaction, that's when we get the smell. So with deodorant, the product itself, you could think of it as more of a cosmetic approach to masking the odor. Now, there can be antimicrobial agents that are also formulated within deodorants that helps to curb the growth of microorganisms in the sweaty parts. And that's basically how deodorant is used. Now, on the other hand, you have antiperspirants. So antiperspirants, given the name, really they're formulated to block sweat glands from producing sweat. And so it's usually containing some form of aluminum salts to be able to reduce that sweat production from sweaty areas. So they're actually different products and used for different purposes and objectives.
Is it safe to put full body deodorant on different parts of you? Is it okay to wear it all over?
So, so there's a difference between is it okay or safe versus is it necessary, right?
Okay.
That's always the question, because when you look at these claims and these companies that stand behind these whole body deodorants, they're reputable companies. And of course, they're going to go through the rigor of testing, evaluating these products that are claimed to be able to be used whole body. So, you know, if you ask, is it safe? Then if it's with that claim, generally it can be. There's a caveat to it can be, because of course, any products, skincare products can contain ingredients that can cause some irritation. For some individuals, it may even cause contact dermatitis. And if it's used now more generalized on the whole body, that volume or increased amount of exposure could run a higher risk of producing more irritation and more contact sensitivities. Now, the other end of that question is, so it's one thing to say, is it okay and is it safe? The other question is it necessary? So, you know, in areas where there's true lots of sweating, then the use of antiperspirants and deodorants can be very helpful as part of self-care, daily routine to deal with something that bothers many of us, that makes us self-aware. But when you're talking about using it whole body, there are other strategies that we can consider first to control the bacteria that might be a little bit more active in those sweaty bits that actually helps to curb odor. And the other thing is, if you actually think about it, we tend to get odor from sweat in certain areas only. So if we're sweating from the armpits, sure, you may get a bit of odor. But if we're sweating elsewhere, like on the arms or the legs, we generally don't actually get that much smell. And that's because the body part is different, the type of bacteria and the interaction is different. Mm-hmm. So I don't think personally that it's necessary to use whole body deodorant.
Right.
But, you know, it's a different question between is it safe, is it okay, versus is it necessary?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it depends on the texture, but to me, when I'm envisioning rubbing deodorant all over your body, it sounds quite messy and slippery. I'd imagine I'd feel like a baby seal or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you look at these full body products on the market right now, there's different delivery method of these products. So some of them are cream, some of them are stick, some of them are sprays. So if it's, you know, strictly an issue where someone might feel, well, if I use this product everywhere, it could cause a lot of discomfort or, you know, cosmetic texture isn't great. There are formulations that can mitigate that. But, you know, again, it's the question of whether whole body deodorant versus other management methods to curb that odor, to curb the microbial activity is necessary.
Thanks so much for the time, Dr. Lee.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Really appreciate it. That's Dr. Monica Lee, a cosmetic and medical dermatologist in Vancouver. 3:59 on the show. I'd imagine that if you're showering every day, you're using regular deodorant or antiperspirant on your armpits, and you're spraying yourself maybe with something that smells nice, you're probably fine. You're probably fine. We're about 30 seconds away from your news. What a strange topic, but we had to touch on it because I saw an article come up, and apparently it's trending in some of these videos. Your 4 p.m. news is coming up next. We've got a look at time saver, traffic, and weather, and then we are speeding on through back to our question of the day. Should speed limits go up on the highway? That's next.